Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the On Us All Podcast Network.
Do you want to go back in time? Well, cue Huey Lewis and the News. Great Scott, this is going to be fun. Hello, fellow geekologists. Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology, and welcome to our spring bonus series, where for the next 6 weeks, we're going to go just to the main feed on Friday, and we're doing a series called On Loop. We're discussing movies that have time travel or characters in some kind of time loop. And we're going to tie this in to our annual theme of the faces behind us. And what could be first in this series? There can only be one movie that's first in the time loop series, time travel. It's not the first when it comes to time traveling movies and stories, but man, was it a trailblazer for time travel in pop culture. We're talking about no other than Back to the Future. Let's go back to the future.
Great Scott.
And Great Scott, we do. And you hear some voices there. You hear some little giggles, and that's my friends and co-hosts, Kevin and Jill. Welcome. I'm so glad you're in this DeLorean with me, so we can go wherever we want and talk about this. So we're gonna talk about Back to the Future, the first in this series. And imagine that we are sitting in the youth room at my church on the couch, and we're on the big screen on the wall, and for throwback retro 80s movie night, we put on this and we watch this movie together. We just finish the movie, and what is the first thing we say to each other? Jill, I'll let you go first.
Oh my gosh. 1955 was only 30 years before 1985. And then 30 years from that was 2015. And like, also, why don't we have flying cars?
Yeah. Yep. Word. Yep. But I agree.
It's that idea of like history as a kid that I thought was like ancient, right? When I watched this for the first time, when it came out, I think it came out in 88, maybe. I don't remember, but when 85. I watched it.
It was 85.
Released
in 85. And then, yeah.
Watching, thinking that the 1950s was like so long ago and their clothes were so ridiculous and like what, my parents were alive then. And it's like not, it's just this little tiny blip. And I just kept thinking of that history is not really actually history. We're just always in a present moment evolving, and there's no humility in the present moment. I'll talk more about that, but yeah, that was my first reaction. It's like, no way that was 30 years.
Yeah, 30 years. We're going to go back 30 years. How far that is. And like, if we went 30 years back from when we're recording this, we're only going back to 2006. And so, right. You know, I had a BlackBerry, you know, I didn't even have an iPhone. If you're gonna. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Kevin, what's the first thing that you say after watching this movie?
Well, if I'm watching this with like your youth group and this, like pretending this is my first time watching this, I'm going to have a lot of questions about who said that, oh yeah, you can totally have this Mom and Marty storyline. And that's, the fact that this movie got made, don't get me wrong, I love it, but I just love that this is considered like family favorite wholesome movie. Right. And I mean, there are many reasons why it is, but also how did this get made is what I want to know. And that's what's led me to many investigations here. I've watched many documentaries and then read up on Back to the Future. And I'm always fascinated by all of the things of the 80s.
We'll get into that soon. I want to hear some of that. Yeah. For me, I think what I'm going to resonate with, at least when I come back and rewatch it, I'm going to be like, dang, Huey Lewis, I want to get back and get into this soundtrack. What a banger of music soundtrack. The fact that he makes a cameo there and kind of like telling Marty McFly's band that they're too loud. And and the irony that because his band was too loud that he's now having hearing problems as an artist, like a present day. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't help but think about that as I'm watching this movie. But I'm like, I love this soundtrack. I definitely was like, oh, I'm a kid of the 80s. I was 13 when this movie came out. I had my Sony Walkman plugged in with headphones plugged into my Sony Walkman and the skateboard. And I would love to grab hold of the back of a car and go fast. And I get all the pop culture reference of Star Wars and Star Trek all in one sentence. I was like, wait a minute, what's going on? But yeah, I adore this movie. But then, of course, thinking back of 1950s and then 80s, what was allowed in movies and not, and what it was trying to commentary on. Yeah. We can talk about that too, but I adore this movie and I loved watching it again. And so just real fast before we hop into like our history with the movie and then kind of trying to recap it. This isn't the first time travel movie, but it is the first time travel movie I remember seeing as a kid. And I don't know if you guys, in terms of what, you know, came before this or after in terms of the big time travel on loop movies. You know, I did a little Google research about like, what is the first time travel story in the history of humankind? And it goes like to 400 BC with like a Hindu epic about someone being in a time loop and kind of reviewing their life. Yeah. So like even before Christ, there were these stories of contemplating what would my life be like if I could go back in time and change things, or the gods played around with time to either mess with me or to have a life review. Some of that goes way back to humans could even dream up these kinds of stories. And of course we had the clock that went backwards is an age old in the late 1800s. You had Rumpelstiltskin. You had H.G. Wells, The Time Machine, even before we got to the 1900s. And then my personal favorite, The Sound of Thunder, which is a short story by Ray Bradbury in 1952 about going back in time and somebody accidentally steps on a butterfly and it changes all of history. So those are some of the stories that were there. And then, of course, present day, whether it's Endgame or others that refer to Back to the Future and what that means in pop culture and stuff too. But in terms of y'all, there are some favorite time travel stories either that precedes or after Back to the Future that you kind of think of to lift up. They might even talk about it in the series. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Kevin, do you have one? Do you want to begin?
Let's see. I do love the movie Looper. It's kind of that one is because that really plays on a fascinating element of time travel. It's funny because I had a creative writing professor in college who hated time travel stuff because he's just like it inevitably leads to just another confusion. And a paradox. One of my favorites, even though like I know it absolutely breaks all of its rules, like, and doesn't really play it, is the movie About Time. That's like one of my favorite rom-coms. I do. Yeah, I love it. It like I watch that every Valentine's Day. That's like one of my go-to. Like it's just and it is like pretty absurd. Like I said, the rules it establishes about time travel, it breaks all of them in the third act and doesn't really care to explain, but it's still really good storytelling. So I think that's the thing about time travel is it's really hard to not make it a paradox, but I do love some stories that I care more about. Can they do it well to tell a good character-based story and examine stuff like that? So that's what I love about that movie.
Yeah, kind of multiverse time travel stories is used as a tool to help us reflect on meaning and purpose. You think of like A Christmas Carol, you know, the past self, present self, future self as life review of what my life means to me. So I think it definitely serves this purpose. It can be overdone. There's paradox. You have to, hold your belief systems or how everything structures in physics sometimes to the side to see what happens. But in terms of like all that is a literary tool to help us go a little deeper. Jill, in terms of time travel movies, things that stick, that pop up or stick out to you, we'll probably hit on some of these later on in the future, but I just talking about it, Back to the Future, even though it's first in the series and it's a big one in pop culture. I think we also have to acknowledge that it's not the first. Jill, you're
sorry, certainly not the first, but for anyone like in our age range, it's sort of the blueprint as far as a time travel movie. And so anything that I saw after I had seen Back to the Future, I would sort of relate back to like, what are the rules that Doc Brown laid out about time travel? Because if it doesn't fit in there, it just doesn't feel like it works. And it was really funny to revisit the work. I also just rewatched the movie on Friday night and like how simple and rudimentary it is.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I watched About Time, I was like, wait, he goes back, but he's in his own body. Like, what could he not see himself? Umbrella Academy was another one. That's like probably one of my favorite time travel series.
Yep.
And I kept thinking about like, wait, but they saw each other and then the world doesn't explode. It's funny, like if they come in contact with their themselves in back in time, they have extreme gas. I don't know if you saw that series. Yes. They don't talk about, it's not in the comic book, but it is in the movie or the TV show. And I'm like, well, that wasn't in Back to the Future.
No. New ground.
Yeah. And then probably my favorite time travel movie is the one with Tom Cruise, Edge of Tomorrow. I really like that. And that's more of like a video game type of concept of like, you have to like master everything that you're doing, to like, you know, for time to be able to progress.
That's one of like my favorite non-Mission Impossible Tom Cruise action movies. Like, that's a great one.
It really is.
So good. And Emily Blunt is so good in it too.
Yes. Fantastic.
And yeah, you may hear some of these in this series. You just have to stay tuned to find out. But just as we begin the series and talk about this movie, I thought we'd lift that up some too. Of course, there's favorite, you know, we have big Doctor Who fans, Time Lord fans on this show, and shows like Quantum Leap. And it's just a great literary tool to do some reflection on the purpose and meaning of your life, even though we're called to be in the present moment and to be present and make every moment count as where we are now, to reflect on the past and what we want to be in the future. All those things is important and a helpful tool. And I think this movie helps do that too. So what's, thinking about also, you know, it's 1985, Marty McFly, Doc Brown, Biff, you got some fantastic actors in there. The director and writer of this movie also did Forrest Gump, did he not? He did this
Robert
movie.
Zemeckis,
Robert Zemeckis. And so in terms of like legendary status, and that I didn't realize when the movie starts, it says a Steven Spielberg production that he helped produce this, and definitely the soundtrack and the beats and the cutting and the editing had some Goonies feel to it, especially that opening scene with clocks and contraptions and booby traps and all those kinds of things that really call back to why I love some movies from the 80s. That's for sure.
Yeah. This is such an 80s film.
Full on. So our history, before we do a synopsis, Kevin, what's your history with the film? You're the youngest in this group here. I'm curious when you saw this and what was the impact it had with you? What's your history with this film?
Yeah. No, I was trying to think of the exact age. I don't remember exactly how old. I mean, I know I was a teenager, so it was, I can't remember if it was middle school or high school, but I think the first time was somewhere when, because it was on TV all the time. So I think I just caught it at one point. And I think I had seen maybe clips and stuff before I finally saw it in its entirety. But it was somewhere in that adolescent stage. And there's a lot I don't remember the very first time I saw this movie, because I've seen it so many times since then. And I've owned the box set of the trilogy for so long that it's hard to remember that first time. But it absolutely blew me away. I was just mesmerized by the comedy of it, the sci-fi, the perfect casting, Yeah, and I mean, and yes, like I wished I had been alive and, you know, seen this in theaters when it came out, it would have been awesome. But you know, I knew how much of a pop culture touchstone it was. And, you know, my parents were huge fans of Family Ties. So, like, they showed me and my siblings episodes of that later on, even though, I mean, obviously we weren't watching it when it aired, but we all love that show. And so I always loved Michael J. Fox. And it just blew me away as far as this, you know, cross-genre epic. It was funny. It had a great soundtrack. It had a great story, great effects. So, yeah, it's just one I've seen I don't know how many times. And like I said, I've had the DVD box set of the whole trilogy for years and years and watched that on loop.
There you go.
Jill. And I just want, just because they real quick, I'll say a little bit later, but I just rewatched like a documentary on Netflix about it. So I'll give some stuff.
Fun. Yeah. I want to hear about that.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Jill, what's your history?
I also watched it on loop. I mean, I saw it in the theater when it came out, like, I was very young, but I remember. And the 80s was such this time where we had like movie stars that looked like normal people. I feel like we don't really have that anymore. Like everyone's so beautiful now. But to me, like Michael J. Fox was like someone I could have gone to school with. He just looked like an average guy, but like everyone loved him. I also grew up watching Family Ties. I mean, like originally I didn't watch reruns. That was like my show. I loved it. It's probably a VHS that I wore out and my dad had to go buy a new one.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I was 13 when this came out. So I definitely saw it in the theater and it's like hit that kind of teenage Huey Lewis in the news.
Yes.
You know, the power of love. I'm going to go back in time. Like all those songs were on loop on the radio. The promotion for it. Michael J. Fox was huge on TV. I would watch Family Ties. He was big movie star, all that. And so I do remember seeing this a number of times in the theater when it came out. And of course, you know, on TV or HBO or renting it, seen it many, many times. But it's been really long since I've sat down and watched it all the way through from beginning to end without stopping, knowing we're going to talk about this and take some notes just to kind of look and examine this through a critical eye. I loved doing that. It'd been a minute. We just assume that so much is of this movie is in pop culture and just referencing things. You forget some of the little details that are there in it. Like his whole guitar solo where the kids are just staring at him. I forgotten about that scene and he's just wailing on the guitar and they're just standing like, what are you doing? And he's like, yeah. But you don't understand what your kids will one day love. It. Yeah. That was me
your
in 85.
Kids are gonna love this.
Yeah. I was like, that's me. That's me. My parents were, you know, children of the 50s and then they had me. And so I was like, yeah, I love that kind of music. I love rock and roll. I love guitar solos. So that was super fun. So yeah, I feel like it kind of hit me right at adolescence and then has been with me kind of all the way through. And then when Christopher Lloyd showed up in The Mandalorian, I was like, yes, there you go. That's the reference, the pop culture reference that I need for Back to the Future and sci-fi. It's really, really good.
I'm sure you've seen it, but speaking of the guitar solo, the meme, well, it's been done as a ton of memes of the whole, like, you know, your kids are going to love this one day. It has George Lucas's face on him and it's talking about the prequels. He's like, yeah, you're not ready for this, but your kids are going to love it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there you go. It's so good. Jill, do you feel comfortable trying to summarize this movie in 2 or more minutes? We're here. If this somebody might be first ever listening to Systematic Ecology or hearing a Back to the Future, and they're like, man, what is this movie they're talking about? And we'll fill in gaps if you run into a snag or two. But
let me give it a shot.
Yeah.
So this movie is set in 1985, and the main character, Marty McFly, accidentally gets sent back to 1955 in his hometown. So he sees his parents as young teenagers. After he has heard the story of how they fall in love, he gets to kind of live that out, except he mistakenly takes his dad's place. And so his mom falls in love with him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. True story.
And he is tasked with the burden of having to make his parents fall in love to ensure that himself and his siblings are even born. Because if his mom continues this infatuation with him, it ruins the timeline and he disappears and time is altered forever. And he's assisted by his genius best friend, Doc Brown, who invented the time machine.
From falling off his toilet and hitting his head on the sink. And then he came up with it and just sketched it on a piece of paper. So
Really all it is a why. So I can't quite figure out how the flux capacitor is the key to time travel. We don't really get into the science of it.
Yeah.
Do you think I summed it up okay?
That's good. And so again, this fish out of water from the 80s to the 50s. So there's that this element of him, you know, at the beginning of the movie, he's trying to understand his parents and, you know, his dad's being bullied by Biff. His mom is a prude, but drinks a lot and he shouldn't go out on a date with this person because she, you know, she never acted like that. And she wasn't fast, you know. But then he encounters his mom and he's there. Oh, they're totally different people. They're masking something was going on in their lives. And so that kind of contrast of what the revelation that he is understanding and seeing as he's walking through the timeline, knowing some things and trying not to share about the future too much because you don't want to alter the timeline, but you want to save the timeline. All those things, along with a cool soundtrack and him mentoring his dad how to be a man. You know, talk about the faces behind us. Your own son is mentoring you through high school of how to like stick up for yourself. It's a lot of fun. Kevin, what other kind of spots there in the plot that we don't want people to miss?
So also at the beginning, great song, Rachel, at the beginning before he gets sent back, Doc Brown shows the time travel machine to him, and then they're thrust into a death situation where terrorists are after Doc Brown because
it's the 80s, so the Libyans.
Yes,
Libyans.
Exactly. Because he used plutonium to power the machine. And so Doc Brown is killed there in 1985, just as Marty escapes. And so that also presents a dynamic, because not only does Marty have to make his parents fall in love to prevent, you know, him being erased from existence and his siblings, but also he wonders if should I reveal this to Doc about what's going to happen to him? And that creates a great conflict, is when he tries to tell Doc for the end, Doc's like, no, I can't know anything about the future. That'll mess with everything. Don't let it happen. But of course, he does eventually read a note that Marty left behind, and that leads to him saving himself and putting armor. And also, one of my favorite plot points is that because a lot of the movie has to do with, you know, like you guys said, about Marty not knowing what his parents were like in high school. He only has this personification of them as adults, and he learns that not only was his mom, you know, like more rebellious, but also his dad was an aspiring author and like had put away these dreams for the longest time. And he, you know, I love that line, like, get out, I didn't know you want to do anything creative, you know. And and he helps him get over his confidence of, you know, submitting stories out and getting published, and that changes the trajectory of his life.
Yeah,
so cool.
I really love that. And yeah, like the pop culture references of not only like 1 point, what is it? How many gigawatts?
1.21 gigawatts. I sent Jill and Will the invite for this and titled it 1.21 gigawatts. Great, Scott.
And is that for lightning? I didn't fact check it. Is that how many, like how much power is lightning the same amount of plutonium?
There's no real science in this movie.
Zero science, except melting somebody's brain with loud rock and roll music and a Sony Walkman saying that he's Darth Vader from the planet Vulcan. You know, all the nerds are going, wait a minute, you know, but the fact that he created his dad's, you know, sci-fi career by that experience is pretty fun.
It is.
Yep.
It made me think. So two things I want to say about how when Stan Lee was questioned about how do you come up with the science for the things in your comic books? And he would say, like, I just try to get as close as I can. Like, I'm not an actual scientist, but I make things up and I ask people and we get pretty close. And I was thinking, like, none of that was happening in Back to the Future.
No. But I do like the callback to Einstein. Like, we'll talk now about some of our favorite characters and the faces behind too, but the fact that they tip their hat to Einstein, because really his science did talk about like the relativity of space-time and how that affects on that. And we've learned so much about quantum mechanics and quantum physics since then. And the question still lingers out there. Is time travel possible? And some of the greatest minds and scientists are still pondering these things. So the fact that you name the dog Einstein, and the dog is the first being ever to experience time travel, is just right on the money. So the fact that, like, you know, that one of my favorite characters, even to go to a brief moment, is Einstein is the one who experienced time travel first, and the callback to Einstein and his science. What are some of your favorite characters, and maybe the faces behind them or in front of them is influencing this movie and beyond?
Ooh, I mean, of course, Marty, but I like some of my, I mean, as one of the great bullies in pop culture, I do love Biff, and every time he's on screen, because it was perfect casting. Tom Wilson was a comedian before this, and I mean, he just brings the perfect energy to this role. Hello, McFly, anyone there? You know, like, I mean, all those mannerisms and the one-liners, but, you know, I mean, he's a terrible person, but he does epitomize that classic bully so well, and it adds a perfect antagonist on top of everything else going on. It's like, you know, he has to deal with all this, so I love that. I love George as well. There's just the dynamic between George and Marty is just perfect, because it made me wonder about, like, what would it be like if I went back in time and, like, you know, just to see what my dad was like in high school. You know, I have ideas, but it's like, that's also, you know, it'd be really interesting to see what his day to day would be like. You know, it'd be fascinating.
Yeah, I think about, like, me going back and just seeing young Will. Would I be totally annoyed by this little punk who talks back to his teachers
and
laughs too much in class? I'd be like, oh my God, this punk. Even like Seminarian Will. I think if I went back and met Seminarian Will, I'd be like, who is this guy? Oh my gosh. So yeah, the fact that going back. But yeah, like Jill, what you were saying is it only 30 years. It's like 100 years in the past, 30 years. But so much was different in time of that time. Seeing the town in the 80s and how it was kind of run down. They're trying to save the clock tower. And then going back to the 50s, a little bit more vibrant. But even there, you know, that one, you know, I love the way he's like, oh, you're from the future. Who's the president? He's like, Ronald Reagan. Yeah. And he's like, oh, the actor. Then who's the vice president? Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis.
And yeah. They're like, well, yeah. Yeah, anything's possible these days, right? And so, but even then, like, who's running for mayor? Who's the dude running for mayor?
Goldie Wilson.
Yep. And so, like, even in the cafe, they're like, oh, a colored person who's going to be mayor, that'll be the day. And he's like, no, I think I can do this. And so it's Marty who plants the seed of the possibility of, like, you can do this. And that's the face behind him of saying, like, you know what? I like the sound of that.
I can do it.
It's just a beautiful moment, even though it's, you know, you're like, oh boy, watching it now, back to the 80s, where they're saying, but then you're like, yeah, the 50s was a different time. Goldie's like really the only black man in this, except for the band, right?
We have the band. The awesome band,
Marion Barry, who, you know, whose cousin is going to make it big one day because of listening to Marty McFly do this. But yeah, Jill, some of your characters and faces behind them.
Yeah. Gosh, I just love all of that. I think George is my favorite, George McFly. I love that actor, Crispin Glover. And so I was watching this movie with my husband and he's like, oh my gosh, he is overacting so much. And I'm like, I know, that's the point. Like, I love his character. But he's such a wimp. And I just love that he finally gets enough guts to, like, you know, punch Biff. I will say, so my kids watched all of my favorite movies when they were little, because my mom and dad still have their VHS collection.
Nice.
So they had probably started watching Back to the Future, the whole box set, when they were like 4 and 5 years old. And then during COVID, when we were all looking for things to do that were not, you know, inside, I was like, let's go to the drive-in. And so we went, decided to go to the drive-in to see a triple feature. All three Back to the Futures were going to play back to back to back. And my son, they were like in seventh grade. So he's 12, 13 years old, says to me, wait, you want us to go as a family and watch that movie where the kid pretends to date rape his mom? This doesn't seem like family entertainment.
That's right. That's right.
Yep. And I had never thought of it through that lens, like ever, mm-hmm. after watching it a million times. We just have a different language now. We have a different understanding of dynamics between men and women, like all of it. But even watching it with my husband, he was like, wait a second. What's happening in that car? You know,
sexual assault. What? Sexual assault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First it was planned and then it was unplanned, but you know, get stopped.
Yeah.
And I think it was the first time that even Don, my husband, had thought like, that did happen. And that was like normal in the 1950s, and it wasn't called assault.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, which brings me kind of the next thing. How does this movie hold up? Like, there's definitely pop culturally, it had its influence. Top 10 movie of all time that has had pop culture, you know, influence on how we do pop culture. But how does this movie hold up, and what holds up and what doesn't? Curious about that. What you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, I think probably that is the part that doesn't age super well.
Not at all. Yep.
But it is good for us to look back and think, okay, just that, like in 1985, that was typical to talk about. We didn't name it. We just saw it. And that's sort of one of the things that gives us the culture we have now. Even in the very, very beginning, did you all catch this? He's talking to his girlfriend and these women in leotards walk by and his like head turns and he's watching them and she doesn't say anything. She kind of just like turns his head back and starts laughing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, today there's no way.
Yep. Yep. She catches him, you know, like peeking and looking and then just kind of moves right along. And then later on, it's like, oh, and she writes on a note, I love you. See you tonight. You know, and then later on, you know, you see that they last because Doc comes back and he's like, oh, it's about your kids. Not about y'all. You guys are fine, but it's your kids. She's like, oh, so, you know, they have a future together. They're going to get married. They're going to have kids. But yeah, at the beginning there, he's still like checking out.
It's this expectation that men don't really need to, they can just behave however they're going to behave.
Yeah.
And well, and also the original meet cute for Marty's parents is the dad was a peeping Tom and fell off a tree. And then she was, thought, oh, he got hit by a car, this poor guy, and took him in. And that was how they met, but never really asked like, oh, well, yeah, but he just kind of like fibbed and said, you know, he didn't remember why he was there.
He was just bird watching, right? He was just bird watching. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't doing anything, but yet, and that, again, a part of that revelation that Marty is looking at his parents as different. Wait, what were you doing? Not cool.
Yeah.
You know, and then, and then his mom and all that, like, there's dynamics there of like, what if you met your parents back when they're teenagers or in high school, you know, what would that mean or look like? So, yeah, I mean, I think all in all, the story beats, the fast pace, the urgency, going from one thing to the next, it's an adventure. Like it is fast paced. It does not slow down. The way that it's put together, the storyline, it really does hold up that way. But of course, there's things in terms of how we understand these certain decades and what we know now and what is acceptable or not, or what is cringy or not, or what is just flat out wrong, is there within the movie. So it's a good time capsule in itself of looking back and going, yep, this was the 80s. Let's filter through that and talk about what that looks like. So, yeah, I think
it's the same with watching John Hughes movies now. Like, I still love them, I mean, every one of them is like, oh, this is like, you know, this is being made as a joke. Like, it's really, you can still, you know, appreciate the storytelling, what they do. But yes, there are a lot of things that are of their time. And I'm okay. Kind of, like, I can watch things through a lens like that and look at. So I still love this movie, but yes, it's. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. Like, that was the, because I can't remember exactly how old I was when I first watched this, and, like, if all of that registered with me the first time, I doubt it did. But, right. Yes, on rewatches and being more conscious of, you know, cultural attitudes and, you know, what was considered funny at the time and it would not really fly today, all these things, you know, I think, you know, comedy evolves, you know, culture evolves.
Yeah, but there was a string where we were like, the girls were growing up, you know, hitting 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And we're like, oh, we want to show you our favorite movies, whether it's Footloose or Back to the Future or others. We're like, wow, the Gremlins. We're like, oh, boy, wow. There's a lot in here that we forgot that we didn't remember was important that stuff. So like, we did. We had a lot of great Scott moments and showing those to our kids.
Yeah. But, casual misogyny, casual racism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So, all right, let's have a conversation. Pause. Yeah, let's talk about this for a little bit. Teaching moments, for sure.
Yeah, but how great. Sure.
How great. Yep. Use it as a teaching opportunity. That's what we're doing here, folks. So, all right. All right, two questions. Would you recommend this movie to a friend? And then is time travel possible? Kevin, you first.
100% yes. I mean, that's, you know, I like, I mean, I think you, well, you and I did, I can't remember who was on, when we did the Groundhog Day episode where we talked, like, I think that one has way more, bro, you know, but like, I mean, again, still love it. But like, yeah, there's a lot you have to. So I was like, you know, I was like recommending that one with a caveat. This one, I still fully recommend. I think it's still a great movie and a great genre mashup. But yes, you can also view some of the stuff there outdated and through a cultural lens. As far as is time travel possible? Oof. I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I don't really. I like, we need Andy on here to like give us a definitive answer there. I even if it was the, I think I'll answer that question as if it was, would I use it? No, but like the, because like I really don't want to mess with time continuity. The only way I would ever is if I could like would know that I would have no interference with time. Like I could not bear the responsibility of changing a timeline. If I could be a silent observer, not of myself, I think that would be the cringiest thing ever if I had to like look at myself younger. Heck no, not doing that in a million years. But if I could like just peek into historical events or something like that just for fun, maybe. But like, but it's also very tempting and I don't think like, I think it's beyond what we're meant to for. But as far as the science of it, I would love to get Andy's perspective there.
That's right. It's interesting. All these people with like videos, cameras on their phone, and they can go back and look at themselves when they were younger and what they said and did. Yeah, there's some VHS tapes of us, you know, playing around as kids and home movies and those kind of things. Pictures, you know, even old, like old pictures of me, videos of me surfing. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at that. And so I'm like, would I go back? I would be tempted. I'm tempted to go back and like, you know, surf on the boards that they had in the 60s and 70s with what I know about surfing and develop a new surfboard shape. And then like, instead of Simon Anderson creating the three fin setup, maybe it would be me. I don't know. That sounds nefarious. But anyway, Jill, would you recommend this? And then, you know, do you think time travel is possible?
I would recommend it. I do recommend it. I think it's great to understand where we're at in this present moment, cinematically and in real life. I think it's always good to be looking back and how in the 80s we were so nostalgic for the 50s in a way that we're nostalgic for the 90s now. I do think time travel is possible. I mean, when I look at the political landscape in America right now, I keep thinking like, what freaking timeline are we in? Something went awry in 2016 and this is alternate universe. Get me out.
Now, if that was the option, then yes, I would.
See? 100%. See?
But yeah. If there's somehow a better timeline that we're not privy to, yes.
Yeah.
But I do think it's possible. I think it's probably happening right now.
There you go. I like it. Yeah. When we renamed UFOs UAPs and they're like seeing these things in the air, these blips and things going, my wife said like, maybe that's us. And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, maybe that's us observing ourselves in the past and trying to figure out how to correct what we're doing now. And I'm like, that's not a bad theory. That's not a bad theory or hope that can be there. Yeah. I think I would recommend this movie too. It's It's directed great. It's got good actors. It's funny. Are there parts that are cringy and problematic because of like the 80s and thinkers of the 50s? Sure. Every decade, they're going to look back at 2025 and definitely say that about us as well. But I would recommend it and then recommend the soundtrack even more. Huey Lewis and the News. Come on, let's do it. And yeah, I think in terms of time travel, there's that paradox of like, well, wouldn't they already be here if we did? Well, maybe they are. Maybe they are. So we'll see. Time will tell, and what we understand about science and all those good things.
I recommend everyone go watch the if anyone's seen the Netflix series, The Movies That Made Us. There's an episode on Back to the Future. I rewatched it earlier because it's great. But so fun fact: the genesis of it came from Bob Gale, the co-writer, was visiting his parents when he was in between movies back in Missouri, and he stumbled across his father's high school yearbook. They went to the same high school, and he had no idea that his father was president of senior class president. And that inspired it, the initial idea of like, whoa, what if I could, would I be friends with my parents if I could go back in time? Mm-hmm. So that was where it all began. This is a true statement, but a studio executive wanted to title the movie Spaceman from Pluto. He didn't like the Back to the Future title, and he legitimately believed that. And Spielberg saved it from that because he sent a memo to that executive and said, hey, that was a great joke. We all got a kick out of that. Really appreciate that. And so without response, and then they never heard about it again after that. So they were able to retain the title. And then the most famous thing is that Michael J. Fox was always the number one choice from Zemeckis and Gale, but initially the producers of Family Ties wouldn't let him do it because like they wanted him to be fully devoted on that. So they hired another actor in the role of Marty McFly for 6.5 weeks, Eric Stoltz, and it was a disaster. And they said like, good actor, but they said he didn't understand the material at all, and he took it too seriously because when they did the table read at the end of the movie, he thought, oh, this is horrifying. Like, this guy now lands in a present where it's completely changed and he doesn't have any memories of what his childhood is in that. And like, so he took it so seriously, didn't understand the comedic nature of the movie. And because of that, it was a disaster. So they shot for 6.5 weeks and then finally were able to work out a deal with the producers on Family Ties for Michael J. Fox to film the show during the day, Back to the Future at night. And he got like zero sleep during the making of it, but was, you know, pulled it off instantly. So it was That's one of cool. those, much like the first Star Wars, where there were so many production hurdles that almost prevented it from ever getting made. But it's a miracle that it did.
That's great. Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out. Like, I would love to like the nit and gritty of how any of our favorite stories are made or not made is really, really fun. So super cool. All right. So a closing question. Yeah, we're at the drive-thru or in the youth room on the couch watching the movie or the series. We don't have to create a snack. But what we're gonna do is we're gonna answer the question. All right, if we were in a time loop, who would we want to be in the time loop with? And what would we be watching or story consuming while we're in that time loop, like on repeat? So, person you want to be stuck in a time loop with, and then you're stuck with a TV or movie or book, and it's on repeat, and you're with that person. So, I found this kind of hard. Who would I want to be in a time loop with? I mean, I gotta say family members. I would, you know, just one out of my family. Do I have to pick one of my kids? Do I have to pick my wife, my best friend? Man, I don't know. So I'm going to pick my friend Kevin, and we're going to be stuck in a time loop of the premiere of Endless Summer way back in the 1960s or 70s when that came out, that surf movie. And now we're tasked with trying to progress surfing in the way that we think so. So I think that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, nice.
All right, Jill.
Wait,
how
can
about
we
you?
Do a show? Was this movie or show here?
Just like, I think it's both. I think it says movie okay. or show.
Movie okay. or show.
Yeah.
Because that opens possibilities there. But yeah, my joke one was I was gonna say bring Will and Christian and have Last Jedi on an endless loop just to get entertainment from there. I think I would rather do a show because, like, as much as I love movies, I don't like because when it's in when people ask me like my number one favorite, like can I just send you my Letterboxd top 20 because I don't like to pick like one where I have to, and I don't know that I can watch. Exactly. Whereas if I could watch a show on repeat, then I think I would do Stranger Things and I would get, like, you would definitely be there. Pretty much anyone on Systematic Ecology who's a fan, I'll bring them. And then maybe a few other friends there. But that's an easy one where it's like, that would satisfy all of it because it's like you have movies in there and it's a reference to it. So I could easily watch that on repeat without any, you know, getting bored.
I like that. So if I have to pick just one person, I'm probably picking my daughter, Stella. She's 18. She loves pop culture as much as I do. Like, we don't drive each other too crazy. I think that would be fun. And I would pick the Apple documentary series, Fight for Glory. It's about the 2024 World Series. And I could watch that endlessly and be so happy watching my Dodgers win again and again.
I'm going to change mine. Go ahead.
Okay. Keep going. Baseball is like an allegory for life. Like, to me, it's very spiritual. And so there's lots of other things and other conversations that we could have that would be spurred by baseball. Like, we be talking about the meaning of life and about failure and getting back up and trying again, or feeling like your back is up against the wall and then overcoming. Like, to me, that's what baseball is. So I could do that forever, all day long.
I like your sports moments. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Movies, TV shows. Hey, if it's a show, you know, I'm going to be stuck with my friend Kevin, who is a Duke fan, and I'm going to be stuck with him on a time loop of when North Carolina beat Duke in the Final Four for Coach K's last game. That's what I'm going to do on a time loop. That is what I'm doing. Yep. Changing it up. There you go, folks.
Which Kevin is this?
This is not Kevin Shaver. This is my friend Kevin Powers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know if he's ever listened to this, but we'll see. The Duke fan, we're going to watch that on the time loop. Oh, so fun. Hey, friends, I hope you had fun. Whether you're in a time loop or not, we do hope that you will rate and review our show over and over and over again. Share it with a friend over and over and over again. And check out the series that we have for all the seasons. You know, every season, December, January, Christmas, spring, Easter, Halloween, we do these series every now and then. It's a lot of fun. You can check out all those in our playlists on our website. And I hope you had a good time there. And we even often have polls where you can vote on what we're going to talk about on the shows like this on our series. So we hope that you can engage on Facebook, Discord, all those places as well. And as we close out here, I just hope that all of you experience the power of love.
Thank you all so much for your time listening to this episode. If you want to help sponsor our show, but you can't quite do the membership thing, commit to that once a month payment, good news, you can leave a donation on our Fourth Wall website. You also can get some free content over there. So if you don't have the money for the membership, but you still want to hear some of the extras and bonuses we do over on Fourth Wall, there's an option for that. If you want to support the show without that commitment every month, again, you can donate over there. Every little bit helps. You know, our show has a lot of needs when it comes to equipment, when it comes to going to some of the events we want to go to, advertising, getting the word out about our show. It takes a lot, and we really appreciate each and every person who's able to help us do it, even if it's something free, just like the free membership or leaving a rate and review on our site. Every little bit helps. Your time listening to this helps, and we appreciate all of you. We're so proud of the community we formed over at Systematic Ecology, and we're very happy and we're proud that you're a part of it. Thank you so much for your time and for being a part of this community.
Hey, everybody, this is Alex Matthews, and I'm just here to share with you guys about the Anasal Network. Hope you guys could check out Page and Pixel, which is a podcast about books and video games. Another podcast we would love for you to check out is Your Matter Matters. It's a podcast that puts the and in faith and science. We got Let Nothing Move You with Christian Ashley going through the whole Bible, one chapter at a time. And last but not least, another one called Some Joyful Muses, a music podcast with no rhyme, rhythm, or reason. This show has no set schedule or host, but periodically has some members from the NSL Network posting discussions about various musical topics, everything from Taylor Swift to the music of Adventure Time and more. So I hope you guys will give those a listen, because I definitely will. As a matter of fact, I'm about to hit that subscribe button right now, and you should too.